Welcome to the deep dive. If you're working with imported custom steel parts, well, you definitely know about tariffs. The costs can really add up.
They certainly can.
But what if I told you there might be a way, a real possibility, to get some of that tariff money back?
It probably sounds a bit surprising, maybe even too good to be true for some folks listening.
Exactly. But understanding something called duty drawback, well, it could actually be a pretty big strategic advantage for your business.
That's right. Especially today, you know, with how complex things are with steel imports, figuring out tariff recovery isn't just about saving a few bucks.
No.
It can genuinely impact your bottom line, your competitiveness. We've been digging into duty drawback, also foreign trade zones and temporary importation bonds to see what's actually available.
Right. And our mission today really is to try and demystify all this for you. We want to lay out how businesses importing steel might be able to cut those costs.
And clarify which options are still on the table, especially with some recent changes we need to talk about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We want to give you that knowledge quickly, thoroughly, but hopefully without making your head spin.
Hopefully.
So, okay, thinking about that potential upside, where's the best place to start unpacking this whole thing?
I think the most logical place, and probably the one that applies most broadly for getting tariffs back on steel parts, is the duty drawback program itself.
Okay, duty drawback sounds a bit technical, maybe like some kind of financial jargon. But what does it actually mean for a company bringing in steel?
Yeah, think of it simply as a refund opportunity. Duty drawback lets importers potentially get back up to 99% of the duties, taxes, and fees they paid on imported stuff.
99%. Wow.
Yep. And that definitely includes steel parts. Now, the key condition, the catch, if you will, is that those imported goods have to later be exported out of the U.S.
Okay.
Or, alternatively, destroyed, but under the supervision of U.S. Customs and Border Protection, you know, CBP.
Okay. So export or supervised destruction.
Right. So if your business imports steel, and then maybe you re-export it as is, or perhaps you use it to make something else that gets exported, then this is a program you really should be looking into.
Yeah.
Seriously.
So the crucial thing is that the steel, whether it's the original part or something made from it, it has to leave the U.S. again.
That's the core idea.
Okay. So how does it work in practice? Can you walk us through the process, say, from the moment the steel arrives to potentially getting that tariff money back?
Sure. It's definitely a process, involves a few key steps. First, obviously, you import your custom steel parts. You pay whatever duties apply.
Right.
And that includes not just the base tariffs, but also those big Section 232 tariffs we've heard so much about.
Right.
Plus any anti-dumping or countervailing duties, if those apply.
Okay. All the duties paid up front.
Exactly. Then comes step two, the critical part.
Mm-hmm.
What happens to that steel next?
All right.
If those parts are later shipped out, exported in their original state.
Mm-hmm.
Importantly, without really entering U.S. commerce. Or if they get used to manufacture other goods that are then exported, or even, as I mentioned, if they get destroyed with CBP watching, then you become eligible.
Eligible to file a claim.
Right. You could file a claim for a refund of those goodies you paid.
Yeah.
And another important detail, you have a 5-year window.
5 years?
Yep. 5 years from the date the steel was originally imported to get that drawback claim submitted.
Okay. 5 years is actually, well, it's not forever, but it gives you some breathing room.
It does provide some flexibility, yeah.
You mentioned a few scenarios where this drawback applies. Could we maybe walk through some really concrete examples just to make it super clear?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Let's say you import some custom-made steel hinges for a project, but then maybe the overseas order gets canceled.
Okay.
Happens.
Right. So you re-export those exact same hinges. You never use them in a product sold here. That's a perfect example of what's called unused merchandise drawback.
Okay. Unused merchandise.
You paid the import tariffs, but since the hinges went right back out, you can claim that refund. Got it. What's another one?
Okay. Maybe you import steel coils. You use those coils to manufacture, say, components for an industrial pump. And then you export the entire pump.
Right. The finished product goes out.
Exactly. In that case, you'd be looking at manufacturing drawback. And for that, you'd need paperwork showing, you know, the link between that imported steel and the pump that got exported.
Documentation is key there.
Always. And one more. Say you import a batch of steel plates, but you find some are defective. They don't meet spec. You have to scrap them.
Okay.
If you destroy those defective plates under CVP supervision, that also qualifies for duty drawback. It's pretty adaptable, really, depending on how your business operates with imports and exports.
Those examples definitely help paint the picture. So let's flip that. When would a business not be able to use duty drawback for their imported steel? What's the ineligible scenario?
Well, the most common situation, the one that disqualifies you, is when that imported steel gets used to make products that are sold and consumed entirely within the U.S.
So domestic sales.
Right. If the final product doesn't leave the country, if it stays here, then generally you can't get those initial import duties back through drawback.
That's a really crucial distinction. If it stays here, part of something sold here, no refund. But if it eventually crosses the border again, then there's a chance.
Precisely.
Now, a huge deal for steel imports lately has been those Section 232 tariffs, a big cost factor. Are those specific tariffs eligible for duty drawback refunds too?
Yes, and that's a really important point for listeners to grasp. Section 232 tariffs are eligible for duty drawback refunds.
Okay, that's good news for some.
It is. But the condition is exactly the same. The imported steel, subject to those 232 duties, still has to be either re-exported or properly destroyed under CBP supervision.
Same rule applies. Export or destruction. Okay. Now, you hinted earlier that something changed recently regarding Section 232 tariffs. Something about exemptions. Can you unpack that for us?
Yes, this is a major shift, really. Something anyone importing steel needs to be aware of. Previously, companies could apply for exemptions from Section 232 tariffs.
Right, the product exclusion requests.
Exactly. You could argue, maybe, that there wasn't enough domestic supply or the material specs were unique, things like that. But, and this is the key change, as of 2025, that route, that possibility of getting specific steel products excluded from Section 232 tariffs at the point of import, well, it's gone.
Hold on. So no more product exclusion requests for Section 232 steel starting in 2025.
That's the situation, which you can see makes duty drawback potentially even more important. It becomes a primary way to recover those Section 232 costs if you meet the export or destruction criteria.
Wow. Okay. That really changes the landscape. So if you were relying on those exclusions, you now really need to understand drawback if you export.
Absolutely.
Our sources really underline this point. Drawback, yes, still available for Section 232. Exemptions, no, not anymore. And it's also worth pointing out, like our sources do, that free trade agreements don't get you out of Section 232 duties either.
Correct. FTAs don't waive them. So duty drawback really stands out as this important mechanism regardless of your FTA status.
Okay, so for a business listening right now thinking, hey, maybe this applies to us, what are the actual practical steps they need to take? How do they go about reclaiming these duties?
All right, let's break down the action steps. Step one, and honestly, maybe the most vital, meticulous record keeping. You absolutely have to track every single steel import, keep detailed records, the import entry forms, exactly how much duty was paid on each shipment, everything.
Okay, tracking everything is step one. What's next?
Step two is linking. You need to be able to directly connect those specific imports to your later export transactions.
How do you do that?
Often through things like serial numbers or maybe batch tracking, some clear method to show this imported steel went into that exported product or the specific imported batch was the one re-exported.
Got it. Traceability.
Exactly. Step three, file the actual claim with CBP. This isn't paper anymore. It's done electronically. You use CBP Form 7551, and it goes through their online system, the Automated Commercial Environment, or ACE.
Okay, electronic filing via ACE. Step four.
Evidence. You need to gather and submit all the supporting documents. Think commercial invoices for both the import and the export. Shipping documents, bills of lading, airway bills.
Right.
And critically, solid proof that the goods were actually exported or destroyed under CBP supervision.
Proof of export or destruction is key.
Undeniably. And finally, step five.
No.
Don't forget the clock is ticking. You have to submit that drawback claim within 5 years on the original import date of the steel.
5 years. Got to stay on top of that deadline.
Miss it and you lose the chance for that refund. It's a hard deadline.
It sounds like it demands a lot of precision, a lot of organization. Just managing all that paperwork seems like it could be a real headache.
It can be, no doubt.
Yeah.
Which is actually why understanding the different types of duty drawback can be helpful too. It helps you organize your approach and make sure you're submitting the right kind of proof.
Right. We touched on those types with the examples earlier. Can we get just a bit more detail on those categories? Unused, manufacturing.
Sure. So unused merchandise drawback. That's probably the simplest. Like the hinge example. The imported steel is re-exported in the exact same condition. No processing, no use here in the U.S. Straight in, straight out.
Okay, unused. pretty clear.
Then you have manufacturing drawback. This is often more complex but can be very valuable. This is the pump example. Your imported steel becomes a component in something new you manufacture, and that new product gets exported.
Right.
This type requires really detailed records. Often you need what's called a drawback manufacturing ruling or similar documentation approved by CBP showing exactly how much imported material goes into each exported unit.
So more complex documentation for manufacturing drawback.
Definitely. And the last main type is rejected merchandise drawback. This covers that scenario with the defective steel plates. The imported goods are found to be damaged, not up to spec, something's wrong. So you either export them back out or destroy them under CBP supervision.
Okay, rejected merchandise. That makes sense too.
Yeah, and each of these types has slightly different nuances in the specific proof CBP will want to see.
Knowing those types helps frame it. Okay, let's talk documentation again because it sounds critical. What's the absolute must-have list of paperwork for a successful claim?
Yeah, the paper trail, or maybe the electronic trail now, has to be solid. First, obviously, the official claim form itself, CBP Form 7551.
Okay, Form 7551.
If the seal changed hands, like if you imported it but sold it to another company who then exported it, you'll also need CBP Form 7552. That's the certificate of delivery.
Form 7552 for transfers. Got it.
Then, absolutely critical, proof of export. Your original bill of lading for sea freight, airway bill for air, maybe the official customs export declaration. Verifiable proof it left the country.
Proof of export, check.
You need the commercial invoices. Both the one from when you imported the steel and the one for the later export.
Both invoices.
And this is super important. The import entry summaries. That's CBP Form 7501. This is the document that proves you actually paid the duties in the first place. No proof of payment, no refund.
Right. Got to show you paid to get it back. Makes sense. Form 7501.
Exactly. And finally, if it's a manufacturing drawback claim, you need those detailed manufacturing records we talked about. Bills of materials, production logs, whatever, clearly shows how that imported steel was used in the exported goods.
That is quite a list. It really hammers home why starting with good record keeping from day one is so vital.
Yeah, it really is.
So what are some best practices? Any tips for businesses to navigate this more efficiently and, you know, boost their chances of actually getting the refund?
Okay, best practices. Number one, we've said it a lot, but meticulous, accurate record keeping is just non-negotiable. Consider using software, maybe integrated systems that can track imports, exports, and link them together. It can really help reduce errors.
Good point on software.
Second, file timely. Don't wait until month 59 of that 5-year window. Start preparing well in advance. Give yourself buffer room.
Procrastination is not your friend here.
Definitely not. Third, seriously consider getting help. Duty drawback specialists, licensed customs brokers. These folks live and breathe these regulations. Their expertise can be invaluable, especially navigating the complexities and avoiding pitfalls.
Don't be afraid to call in the experts.
It can pay for itself. Fourth, clarity and consistency in your documents. Make sure everything matches up descriptions, quantities, values across all the forms and invoices. Discrepancies raise red flags.
Attention to detail.
Huge. And finally, just be aware. Incomplete or inaccurate paperwork is, far and away, the biggest reason claims get delayed or just flat out denied. Getting the details right saves time and money in the long run.
That's all really solid, practical advice. It definitely sounds like the refund opportunity is real, but it demands, you know, a proactive and super organized approach.
That sums it up well.
Now, way back at the beginning, we briefly mentioned a couple of other things, foreign trade zones and temporary importation bonds. Can you just give us a quick idea of how those might fit in as potential ways to get tariff relief on steel?
Sure. So while drawback is about getting duties back after you've paid them, FTZs and TVs are more about potentially avoiding or delaying duties up front, but only in specific situations.
Okay, different approach.
Right. Foreign trade zones, or FTZs, are these special secured areas inside the U.S., but legally, they're considered outside U.S. customs territory.
Interesting. Outside customs territory while being physically here.
Exactly. So if you bring your imported steel parts into an FTZ and then you export them directly from the zone without them ever formally entering the U.S. market, you might avoid U.S. duties completely.
Ah, okay. If it goes straight from the zone back out.
Correct. Or you might be able to do some manufacturing or assembly inside the zone, and you wouldn't pay duties until the finished goods leave the zone to be sold in the U.S., if they ever do. It allows for duty deferral or sometimes reduction.
Okay. FTZs offer some flexibility there. What about TBs? Temporary importation bonds.
TBs are different again. They let you bring certain goods into the U.S. temporarily without paying duties, under bond. This might apply to things like steel samples, maybe prototypes, or goods you're bringing in just for processing, and then they'll be immediately exported.
So temporary entry.
Right. But it's strictly temporary. Usually you have to export the goods within 1 year, though extensions are sometimes possible. You post a bond guaranteeing they'll be exported. If they aren't, you forfeit the bond, which is typically double the estimated duties.
Okay, so TEBs are for short-term situations with a guarantee of export.
Exactly. Both FTZs and TEBs can be useful tools for specific scenarios. But, you know, for a business that's regularly importing steel, using it in production, and then exporting the finished goods, duty drawback often ends up being the more practical and widely applicable way to recover those tariff costs.
That helps clarify where those other options might fit in. Okay, so as we start to wrap this up, if there's one absolute key takeaway you want someone listening who deals with imported custom steel to remember from our conversation today, what would it be?
I think the most critical thing is this. Duty drawback is still a very real, very significant opportunity. You can potentially recoup those tariffs on imported steel, including the Section 232 duties, but only if that steel is eventually re-exported or destroyed correctly under CBP supervision.
And it's even more relevant now.
Exactly. Especially now that the Section 232 product exclusion route is closed off, understanding and properly using duty drawback could be, well, a really crucial cost management strategy in today's trade climate.
Right. And it sounds like the absolute foundation for making that happen is, number one, that incredibly detailed record keeping.
Absolutely.
And number two, really understanding and following all of CBP's rules and procedures when you actually go to file that claim.
Precisely. Accuracy, having all your documentation lined up, and acting within that 5-year time frame, those are the keys to making the duty drawback process work for you.
So, thinking about all this, the end of those Section 232 exclusions, the sheer detail involved in duty drawback, it really does make you wonder, doesn't it? What kind of strategic shifts might businesses need to think about, you know, regarding where they source their steel globally, how they structure their export operations moving forward?
Mm-hmm.
It feels like it's about more than just chasing a refund. It's maybe pushing companies to think about the bigger picture of their whole international supply chain and trade strategy in this kind of evolving landscape. Definitely some food for thought there.
It certainly is. A lot to consider.
Well, thanks for breaking all that down for us today. Really appreciate you shedding light on such an important and complex topic.
Glad to be here.